this is a tax bill from 1913 for this farm.
Oh, isn't that something? $29. Huh. Let's see, it was 31 cents on $100, and then 100 cents, no, let's see, yeah, 100 cents on 100, so it's a dollar on $100 for the county tax.
Now there's one for 1921.
Let's see, that was 35 cents on 100 and $1.60 on 100.
Mm-hmm.
Hi,
hello.
How are you? I'm Jim Massey from the library. Okay, well, that's really neat, huh?
And now here is the deed to this farm for my great, for my grandfather.
Oh, my goodness. George F. Brown and wife.
That was who owned the farm before my grandparents. My grandfather and grandmother bought it from them.
And let's see, that's Robert, what is that?
Lomar.
Huh. Isn't it? Let's see, it's February 27th, 1872.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Circuit Court for Harford County. Let's see. Oh, and there's a stamp. Let's see. Made the 19th day of September in 1871. Lomyer. L-O-M-Y-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Isn't that something? Let's see. In the following described parts of parcels of land called Heavenly Hills, Constantinople, and Enville's Cheney, or by whatever name or names the same was. Oh, boy. Isn't that something? That's really an old document. Huh.
Then my parents, they bought this in 1911. They bought the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then Albert and I think, bought it in 1958? Something like that. We bought it from my parents. My father, my mother's been dead since 1930.
Mm.
And here is an aegis that's, if it holds together, February the 13th, 1914 was up in the trunk.
Now where did you fit in the trunk?
Not an aegis, it's a Harford Democrat, I'm sorry.
Oh.
So used to say in the aegis now. My parents got the Harford Democrat for years from Aberdeen.
Oh.
They still have their paper up there.
Uh-huh. Isn't that something? Huh. Been around a long time. A dollar for 52 issues. Can't beat that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, now let's see. I see that you were born in Joppa. Where were you born?
In this house.
In this house. And where? Who was your father and mother? What were their names?
My father and mother was William H. Lomar. And my mother's name was Elizabeth Susanna. this county paper, his middle name was Herman. You'll see it's, oh, where is it? The outside of it. It has his initials on it. Here it is.
Oh, right. Oh, I see. Huh.
That's how, they didn't waste paper those
no,
days.
They
very tiny.
And so then, was your family farming this land?
Yeah, they've always been farmers.
And what type of farm? What was the farm like? I mean, what did they raise?
Now, as long as I can remember, they've just raised, you know, agriculture, like corn and hay and those sort of things, you know, grain. And of course, my parents, I mean, one of their main crop, but they made money off of as I was growing up was potatoes, was color red potatoes. And I can remember one year my father had about 1,000 bushel. It was a field from here on up to the church was in potatoes. That was the crop. And then he grew tomatoes like from Cross and Blackwell and canning houses at Joppa. It's been canning houses different times at Joppa. Now my husband's father, he had the farm next door and they had a canning house. When was that, Albert?
1919.
Of course, it's been torn down. It was right over there at the crossing at Clayton, down in that hollow by the railroad. Because, see, then they could ship it from the warehouse on cars, the tomatoes. And my father grew tomatoes when Mr. Harmar had the canning house, too. But my father tells me, it's hard to believe, as hard it is to have fruit today. My father told me that the field that's out here in the back from the barn up to the church, he says was an orchard, was a peach orchard. And he said it was beautiful peaches. Of course, that probably was when he was young, you know. And then I guess they didn't have all these boars and everything else, and it wasn't hard to have them. We had quite a few cherry trees here. My husband can remember them too. We had all the cherries we could use when I was growing up. And we had good apples here. But late years, it seemed like unless you just spray the trees all the time and keep after them, it cost you more and for to go out and buy fruit.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Joppa. I started at Joppa, and it's where the Holters, if you know where Holters is up on top of the hill. Harry Holter had a barbership shop there for years. They turned the old school.
Where they have the haunted house.
Oh, yeah.
The haunted house was our schoolhouse. Huh. That's where we went to school. And of course, you all know Mr. Wright, that died recently, Milton Wright. Well, he was superintendent of schools when we were children going there. He used to come around to the schools.
Now, what was the school like inside?
Two-room school.
It was a two-room school, and one side was the first, second, and third grade. And the other side had the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh grade. And our first grade teacher is still living.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Now, who's she?
Mrs. Gatchell, Mrs. Margaret Gatchell, and she lives up in Belair. And she was down here about, I guess, it was a year ago last summer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She was here to dinner. But she's had bad luck since that. I just sat at the breakfast table, and how we mentioned her, and I said to Albert, I said, we must get up sometime and stop to see Miss Gatchell. Her name was Robinson when we went to school before she was married, and she boarded with us, by the way. When I was a child growing up, they lived back here on what's called Wheel Road.
Well, no, it's the single road. We're right next to the Winter's Run.
Winter's Run. Their home is still there, and it used to be post office, I think, at that time. Or was it a telephone exchange? It was something
telephone exchange
that was in her parents' home. And in the wintertime, this Clayton Road down here was a dirt road. And oh, they used to get stuck so bad. And she had like a Model T Ford. And she was afraid of getting stuck. She drove back and forth from home during the good months. She only stayed down here with Mother and Dad when it was bad weather, you know, in the wintertime. And she married Russell Gatchell, who was station agent at Joppa when she was still a school teacher. And then, he went up the road, didn't he, somewhere? Aiken. He went to Aiken and he died. And she'd come back. Well, before he died. Before he died, they come back to her own home place and lived. Because I remember Mr. Gatchell had a pretty garden there and all. So she's still living, and she was our first grade teacher.
Huh. Now, was it a very strict, you know, when you were going, or did you have lots of homework? Or?
Well, I can't remember too much about that. They were strict in behavior. Now, you wouldn't go into the school in Miss Gatchell's room and find any misbehavior.
Hmm.
Because I had a friend that she and I and Price Clapper down here started school together. Of course, her name was Evelyn Everett. We always called her Pids. She's been dead now. Oh, I guess Pids been dead 10 years, hadn't she? And I suppose Price has been dead punir. His widow still lives down here on Route 7. And Pids lived back Clayton Road a long ways, and it was a long ways for her to walk. So she used to stop here. Her father was he sold insurance, and he'd get in later in the evening, and he would take her home. So she spent a lot of time with me, and of course we got to be real good friends, you know. And of course when we went to school, we wanted to sit together. Well, Miss Gatchell didn't let us sit together because we talked. So she always was good to us, though. When it was a bad day and it wasn't money at the in school that day, you know, she'd always say, "Dorothy, you and Evelyn can sit together today." She didn't mind a little more talk, you know. Yeah, they were. It was strict in a way, but I don't think when we got in the older room that they were as strict as far as that. We had homework, but I don't think we had homework like children today have.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now, excuse me. What about the growing up on the farm? Did you have chores and things to?
Oh yes. Plenty of them. Yes, and back when I grew up, the job I hated the most was thinning corn, I think. And of course anybody could thin corn, you know, so I always had to help thin corn, and I can remember my back used to hurt so bad. And I did little jobs. I used to separate the milk. My mother made butter, and we had a cream separator, and I used to do the separating of the milk and then take the skim milk and give it to the pigs and things like that.
Hmm.
It wasn't very strict with me growing up what I did, because I was an only child, and it isn't like some families. I know like Albert's family, it was what, 10 altogether. And when they grew up, they all had their jobs. Hmm. But that wasn't the way with me, because I was the only one.
Hmm. Were there things that your parents taught you in the home, you know, say sewing or cooking or
things? Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. My mother taught me to sew. And we had 4-H Club at at Joppa. And because I remember her name was Ruth Stinchcomb, and it was, you know them, I'm sure, Ed Stinchcomb and Bub Stinchcomb that had the crow's cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their sister. She maybe was about 2 years older than I am, but they lived up on the mountain road, and what happened, one morning it was a fire and her home burned. And I know the teacher and the girls in our class, we made her several dresses. We were taught to sew mm-hmm. enough that we could make her dresses when all her clothes was burned.
Mm-hmm.
And they got material in. I know we made a couple dresses for her.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had home ec in high school. But my mother sewed, and I made clothes for myself ever since I've been 14, 15 years old, earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, now, let's see, you said, did you then go to high school after your
job? Well, when I went to high school, the closest high school would be Belair and Aberdeen and Havre de Grace. And it was no transportation to go to Belair, see.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on the B&O train over here and went to Aberdeen.
Mm.
And our daughter, this is cute, when she was about 5 years old, she was going to go to school the next year. And I have a niece, she still lives right over the hill here. that is 18 months older than Patsy. Of course, those two children were inseparable when they were little. They were together all the time playing, you know. So this one day at the dinner table, and Patsy was sitting next to her granddad, and they were talking about how many inches was in a foot, you know, and he said it was 12 inches, and I don't know, different things, you know. So they got talking about school, and Patsy says to Irene, she says, "Now, my mother went to school in the good old days," she says. "She went on the train, but now when Daddy went to school, he had to go on a school bus. But I went the good old days." I'm a little bit older than Albert, and about, what, a year and a half? And, of course, Albert had a bad seatmate one day at one time in school. And him and Jesse was very bad. And him and Jesse didn't behave so good, and he didn't pass one year, so he was a couple years behind me. I went to Aberdeen, and it was 2 years before he went to Post Road. Oh. So he went to Post Road. But I was just 1 year ahead of Post Road. When Post Road was built, I had passed to the junior year, and they only had the first 2 years at Post Road, so I couldn't come back to Post Road.
Mm-hmm. What was it like going up on the train to...
Oh, it was nice. I mean, we had a real nice time. We always had nice conductors, and it was not many people on the trains those days. Mm. And it wasn't at first when I went to school. It was quite a few of us. It was some children got on at Bell Camp, and some that got on at Bamberger. But then after my last year going up there, it was only three boys and myself that rode the train, and I had a rough time when it snowed getting from Aberdeen Station to the school, because they used to snowball me, and I had a rough time. I had one friend though, he still lives at Van Biver, Homer Walters, and Homer would take my part, but Richard Brumfield is dead now. It was Richard, and so is the Sullivan boy, Earl Sullivan. He drowned overseas, didn't he?
They got foul play over there.
Something in service, I don't know, but those two boys was very mischievous, and we used to play rummy going. We'd turn the seats, you know, and play rummy going to school, and Homer used to play a guitar, and I can almost hear him singing it yet. I had but 50 cents. I know it was in this song. I don't remember the name of it. But he used to really play that guitar and sing. Hmm. But then the railroad took the train off, and I rode the last while I rode the bus. Hmm. It was called Rosedale Bus. Used to go 7. See, that was before 40 was built.
Hmm. What was the Joppa area, this area around here, like? Was it a little village that hadn't, you know?
Yes, Joppa Village. The houses are still down there. I just said to my husband the other day, I said, "Boys, these houses are getting in bad shape from Joppa." But when we were children, there was a Silverman's store that was down next by the railroad. It burnt, didn't it, Alvin? And a grocery store. And it had, back of that was a canning house. And I don't know whether the post office was there, but the earliest my recollection of the post office, it must have been a little building that was with the canning house, where they had the Joppa post office up in Joppa.
The post office was in Silverman's store at first.
Oh, was it? I can't remember that.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then they, I remember Miss Dell, Crow, or Annis is her name now, just died about 2 years ago, and she was the postmistress for years.
Mm.
And it was just a tiny little building there that they had for the post office. And the canning house was in Joppa, and its one church was a church there, which they've got apartment houses, the furthest one up as you go up the hill before that new row of homes on the Joppa Road. And of course, it was a good many years later when they built that other little new post office to the right. The other one was, as you go down the hill, was to the left, back into the village life.
Hmm.
But I don't know, that village must have had about, what would you say, 20 houses, Albert?
Something like that.
But if you notice, Well, you didn't see these. They're, I think it's a baptism certificate of my father's and a baptism certificate of my Uncle Bob. And they were in with these old papers.
Hmm.
And if you noticed on there, they had Magnolia. I think back when they first were born, there wasn't a Joppa post office. See, my father said he was a small boy. He can remember when the B&O Railroad was built.
Hmm.
So back when he was born, there wasn't a Joppa station. It was all Magnolia. Must come all out of from the... That railroad, the Pennsy Railroad, was there first.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it wasn't very... very much. Of course, they had a right nice railroad station there, because this school teacher, when she first got married, she and Mr. Gatchell lived upstairs. It had living quarters upstairs,
mm-hmm.
and a couple rooms downstairs.
Mm.
But I got on the train over here at Clayton, and they only had just a small little, well, it was like one room on the left-hand side, and it was just a waiting shed on the right. And then they had a little cement, what they called them, watch boxes, Albert, where the watchmen to watch the, you know, cars going across. And that's where I went most of the time before, when I was waiting for the train. Mr. Bumgart was the watchman at the time, and he was a real nice old gentleman. And he liked company, and he used to tell me, oh, you know that colored man, he didn't sweep that room up there. It's dirty, and that bar's not going very good. You come stay with me down here. Why he did that? He wanted to talk to me. You know, they sit there all day by themselves. So I mostly wait for the train right in the little watch box, because I was the only one.
Well, now, what was that area toward Clayton like? Were there many, was it farmland?
Well, that's where his, we can see it from here. It's
no,
just,
it wasn't too many houses, right?
Well, no, nobody there. It was a railroad station.
Hmm.
That's where the train stopped. See, years ago, there used to be, quite a few trains, but there was a train both morning and evening going each way, wasn't it, Albert?
There was two. Two go down to Balmer, two come from Balmer,
morning
and evening.
He lived closer to the railroad, so he was more acquainted with them.
Uh-huh.
There was a 2 o'clock train came out of Balmer. I can remember till I was maybe about 7, 8 years old. Then they took it off. They didn't have enough, you know, passengers to ride it.
Well, this area of the county, was it pretty cohesive in the way of doing community things?
Doing what?
Community things, like a fire department or any
kind
of... No,
back in our days, young days, they didn't have no... It was not much in the community except the churches that I can remember. Oh, they did at Joppa have a... They held dances, square dances, didn't they, Albert?
Oh, yeah, that's back in the early 30s.
I can't remember anything when I was a small child growing up, except things that we had at our church.
Mm-hmm.
That was about all.
Mm. Well, now, what about these iron ore banks on your farm?
They were here when I came. It's big ravines right back of that chicken house.
Uh-huh.
It's a ravine going down through there, and it's all the way up. Well, all around here has been where iron ore has been dug.
Hmm.
But,
up behind the church, lay a place up there with the dung iron ore.
Hmm.
Place over here behind Lakeside, down that back in the woods in there. A lot of ravines back there with the dug iron ore in there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was a poor grade of iron ore, see, and they found a better grade than they left this.
Oh. Well, now.
But I mean, there wasn't so much of it, but there was. But they used to take haul the iron ore from here and haul to Magnolia for because the B&O wasn't over here at the time. So.
Oh, huh.
Used to haul it down on horse carts.
Uh-huh. Huh. Well, now, what about, is there any stories about the iron ore and the Civil War?
that I know. I got this letter, and I don't know too much about that. I hope Dolores didn't paint a a wrong picture there. All I know about that was I was 16 at the time, and it was right after my mother died. And my father used to take eggs to a man over here at Fort that stood in Richmond Market. And we'd just come back from taking those eggs over there, and there was a man and his three sons come walking across the field. And I can't remember the man's name. I'm sorry I didn't take it down or something. But as a boy, he lived here. And that must have been in Civil War times. And he said his dream was, all his life, was to bring his boys back and let him see where he was born. But, of course, like he says, the house was gone. And I only got this hearsay from this man. And they were from Midwest somewhere. That's where he came from. And he said when he was a boy growing up, there was a large stone house where our garden is out here, or maybe a little beyond our garden now, because we have a small garden. Years ago, it used to be a bigger garden. And he said that it had an outside stairway, the stone house did. And the way I understood it, that it must have been, I don't know how they did in the Civil War. Did they pay people to fight for them, or I don't know just what it was. Something about that they would bring their horses and feed them in the barn, and then they would hide them out in the ore banks. Now, what that was about, I don't really know. Mm. That was just hearsay, and I can't remember too much about it. Mm-hmm. But all that I can remember, that it was a... No, I mean, I can't remember too much about when I was 16 years old, what was said and done. Uh-huh. I can just remember, you know, the main things of it.
Yeah.
And but he lived here at that time. And of course, it was an altogether different barn than we have now. It burnt when we were just married. 2 years, weren't we? A little over 2 years.
You flipped your barn.
And it was just a little frame. It was a frame barn. And another thing that I can remember that makes it sound true that there was another house. My father, when I was a child, and my aunt that was just 2 years older than him, they used to have great times. He used to do this to tease her. And he said that his sister, that is 2 years older than him, was the first one that was born in this house. And that his parents lived in what we used to call a corn crib. And that building did look like maybe somebody at one time lived in it, because you'd see in between the cracks where it had been plastered. And then I guess they pulled that plaster out when they made the corn crib, you know. Mm-hmm. And it had a loft to it where we used to always put nubbins. That was the musty corn. And that was where you used to see this plaster. And he used to tell her that she was born in that corn crib. Well, I guess his parents, after that house built, burnt, they lived in that home of the corn crib, you know.
Mm.
And then they built this house. This house is over 100 years old. Dad was born in 76. And, 1876. So, in 1976, it would have been 100 years after he was born.
That was the original part of it. We've added on to it.
Huh?
That was the original part.
Oh yes, we did a little. It's been remodeled, I guess, three times. The first remodeling, we just about had to do. It was shortly after. Oh, we'd been married. It was when Patsy was a small child. She was 2 years old, wasn't she? About that summer. Yeah, we'd been maybe married 3-4 years then. And what had happened, we'd put a new floor in our kitchen, but there wasn't a basement under our kitchen. And we've always had inlaid linoleum, and it just had a metal strip across it. Well, we got tile, and what's the name up here that sells real estate? Can't say the name right now. At Abington. Man names, but anyway, he was laying tile at that time, and we got him to lay tile, and of course he put felt or something underneath of it and made it completely tight. We just put a new floor in before we were married, before the baby came. That was what, we had been married, but we put a new floor in it the spring before she was born, because we wanted to put a new electric stove and stuff in. Always had just a wood stove, see, and we figured heating baby's bottles, we better have some other kind of heat, so I mean cooking facilities. So we put this new stove in and this new floor in, and that Christmas after she was born, I was scrubbing the walls down in the kitchen, which is our dining room now, and my foot went through the floor in the corner under the wood box. That was from maybe May, June of that spring to then. So they investigated what that was, and it was termites in that new floor. I don't know whether it was something that drew termites more that was in that new flooring, or whether it was because... So it was eat up, and we decided we had to do something. So we got Mr. Osborne, which is Lester Osborne's father, and because the year before he'd built the barn for us after the lightning struck it, built a new barn, and he remodeled it at that time, and he took all the flooring out downstairs and put new in, and they coated all the sills with creosote to get rid of the termites. So we got new hardwood floors in, and then he did some plastering in the living room and dining room, and he said, while I'm at it, he said, we might as well just plaster the whole house. It won't take much more, he said, to do it. So he pulled the plaster off the whole house and put new plaster in. And what a mess that ever was. But then we wanted to get natural gas was through here, and we wanted to get a natural gas furnace. And this house, the way it was built before, it was the two befores, and then we had the clapboard was right onto that, and then the plaster inside, nothing in between. And we'd never heat it with gas and stuff. So then we had the insulation blown in and had it replastered. And after we had that done, we heated this whole house for $150 with natural gas a year. When we first had it remodeled, it was $150. That's how gas. And before we got in the wood stove, I think 1 month, couple years ago, our gas bill was what, way over $100, wasn't it? So that's how it's gone up.
Let's see, what about the Cokesbury College? Do you remember anything about that?
We had that in Homemakers. And no, I thought I did, but evidently where I thought the Cokesbury College, I don't think was. Someone told me that's what I remembered, but they said that wasn't where the Cokes. When I was a child, it was a man by the name of Wilson that run a store up here. It's the same store where Mr. Tucker run when he gave it up. And they made some apartments, and it's right on top of that hill. There was a part of a porch and something, as you could see, it was something really pretty, must have been, in back of that, but something had burnt. And someone told me that was the college.
That was a big inn in there.
Oh, was that a big inn?
I don't know what the name was, but it was an inn. Mm-hmm. That was Cokesbury Inn. Was it called Cokesbury Inn up at the time or not? But the college was on the same side where the Cokesbury Church was at.
That's what I could get out of it. They got a few things from the library. And we had it in Homemakers just this last year. And a lot of people of us was interested in it. Mm-hmm. And this here, what's the school name up here?
William
Packer. From what I understood, that William Packer was farms or something around there at Abington. Mm-hmm. And they also had in there about a certain man living on Chilberry Farms. Now, the Chilberry Farm, my uncle lived there. I know where that is. Chilberry Farm is right where Gordon Bowers, back of where Gordon Bowers has his filling station. All the land back in there, that was where Antinian... Yeah, Claybourne-Nars. Claybourne-Nars' farm, of course he's sold it now, but where it was there, was this Chilberry Farm. It was on, the 40 went through it. The house in the old barn was towards the railroad. You used to have to come in right below the school there. It was a little, well, it's some trailers there right now. And you had to go across the B&O railroad. And it was a terribly bad crossing because right as you got there, I mean, right before you got there, it was a bad curve that you couldn't see the trains from Aberdeen Way. But my aunt and uncle bought that Chilberry Farm. And then Mrs. White came along, and when they were buying up for Joppa Town, you know, she was one of the realtors then, and she came to Uncle Charlie, and Uncle Charlie had no way of wanting to sell his farm because they had a good dairy there and all, and they wanted to buy the farm and asked him what he would take. So he said, oh, I wouldn't take a thing less than 4,000 an acre. So what happened, short time, a few days later, she come back and she said, well, they take it for that. So they bought the farm for that. That was when it was a boom some years back. You know, they were doing Joppa Town and all that. Mm-hmm. And they bought the farm. And of course, then Uncle Charlie, and he has two, he's a son and daughter, Margaret Gilbert, she lives in California now. And of course, they got farms down Eastern Shore and Claiborne. So they went down there and they bought three farms with the money they got with this from this farm. Mm-hmm. Well, two farms, because one of them, Margaret and Buddy Bill, bought. They had gotten sold a farm hatchery, a duck hatchery in California. It's up there where Disney World was. They put a big highway through, and they had to sell it. And I think they got $105,000 or something for it. So they bought that to Eastern Shore and bought, put it back into land, see. So now when they have anything done, or their bill heads is Chilberry Farms down there. Hmm. They've named those farms from the farm here. Huh. And they call all three of them, they're under the heading of Chilberry Farms.
Hmm.
But that's an old farm, and some of the real old people that settled there lived there, because it was in that, it's something from the library.
Hmm.
Gene Thompson got and read to us, and it had in there.
Hmm. Let's see, what about the canning houses? Were there lots of canning houses around here?
The what kind?
Canning houses.
Yes, years ago it was. Because there used to be a canning house, I can't remember it. Down here where Scully's was at one time, didn't it?
Sure.
McComas's canning house. And that is between...
Norris's canning house up there at right across Gold Coast Road?
Yeah, Norris's canning house. And that was the man that owned the Chilberry Farm.
Uh-huh.
Mr. James T. Norris.
Around
and,
the canning house at Magnolia?
Yeah. And James T. Norris was a county commissioner of Harford County years ago. And he lived in the farm right across from William Peck's school there.
Well, that's part of the Norris farm.
Yeah, well, the school ground is Mr. part of it. Bowers has bought it, I guess, from Mr. Norris, didn't he? Because Mr. it was nobody in there between Norris's, I don't think.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can remember Mr. Norris so very well because he was a good friend of Dad's. And... he had the first automobile that I ever rode in. Because I know I was maybe 5 years old, and I can remember it was a children's day, and Mother had got me all dressed up. You know, you wore those white dresses and with great big bows and things, and I was all dressed up, and I don't know what he used to call me. I went out on the porch, and he was teasing me about all being all dressed up, you know, and to come sit with him in his car. so I know when Mother and Dad got dressed, he said, well, I'll take you up to the church. So I remember we rode up to the church with Mr. Nars.
Mm-hmm. Well, were the roads pretty smooth and things like they are now?
Oh, no.
Old dirt road.
They were just dirt roads. And right up here above here used to be, wasn't it real sandy? And people would almost get stuck just going through it, just with a horse and buggy.
Hmm.
No, roads was bad.
Well, let's see, this, I guess, wasn't it the only route from...
This was the only route till they put in 40. Now, route 7 was...
the old coach road.
Yeah, but it was... made a catamized road or a cement road. I think that was cement that they laid down. And that was down in about 1924.
Hmm.
It was dirt road up to that time.
They started in 23.
Was it in 23? Funny thing happened about that. The contractors, I can remember them coming in here to get water to take to their men, you know, and things. And he was the boss, you know, and he came in one day to get some water to take out to the men on the road. And he said, what are the people that lives down here on Clayton Road? He says, they've got the funniest name, he said. And Mother said, do you mean Jaworskis? He said, yes. And he said, I tell you, run into another family down here in Balmer County. He said it was several families of them, had a very odd name. And he said their name was Fensky. And Mother didn't mean to embarrass the man, and she said, well, that's my people, that's my name, I'm a Fensky. And he got so red, he was so embarrassed. But they were, you know, putting the road through.
Huh.
And he just thought that was a odd name.
Was it pretty much traffic? Since it was between Baltimore and Philadelphia, it would have been the only road, wouldn't it?
But it wasn't. It was no automobiles.
Mm.
Wasn't there traffic at that age?
No. My parents got their first automobile, what was it, about 24? Model T? I think it was in about 1924. And before that, there used to be people come out from Baltimore, and they were killed down here. Some of them was killed, I can remember. I can't remember the name. At Big Falls, somebody hit them or something, and they were thrown over on the rock. Huh? No, this was Little Falls that I'm talking about. And these people had a shore back of Abington somewhere. I guess it was down Otter Point. Must have been on Otter Point. But the roads to get there was so bad. They used to drive their automobile and park it here and go over to Clayton. And I guess they went up to Sewell on the train and would go to their shore. They had a shore place. So it wasn't much roads around here then. And as I say, right around here, it wasn't hardly anybody had automobiles. And back in those days, they didn't need roads because they were only horse and buggy.
I will do. Never come to any existence. It wasn't about 1921, 22, somewhere along there.
Hmm.
I think it was not about 1923 that my father got the first automobile. A lot different. Wasn't many people.
Mm-hmm. What about Loris Orchard and down toward Joppatown? Do you remember what that area was like?
Well, Loris Orchard was just, before Loris did the orchard, they had chickens back there, I can remember. What was the people that was there before them that had the chickens?
Well, Heckner's.
Heckner's, that's who I'm trying to think of.
There's another family back there.
Uh-huh. Heckner's had it. And before that, it was the people by the name of Lights lived back there.
Lights.
Joe Light lived on it. And it was just a farm, I suppose.
Wasn't much of that.
Hmm?
It wasn't much of that.
Wasn't it? I don't know. I don't know much about Lois. See,
where Joppatown is, not up in the marsh.
Albert can tell you all about that because he went hunting there.
I've been down there many times.
Hmm.
When I was a kid.
His best friend, Frank Shell, Mrs. Shell's the one that sold her farm to the people that built Joppa Town. Mm. I just sent her a letter off today. What, Mrs. Shell's about 86 now? And she's down in Spartansburg, South Carolina. We just had a new grandson about a month ago. So I wrote her to tell her about it. She comes visit, she comes up in the summertime. She always visits us and all. And her oldest son and Albert, Frank Shell and him, went through school together. And Albert always liked to hunt. Mm-hmm. And that was good hunting ground with all that marsh and everything down there. Mm. No, it was, back in those days, it was the house where Virginia Anderson lives now. That was the old mansion house. Mrs. Jones lived in that. And then there was a house a little ways out where the barn was, where Frank and his wife lived.
Yeah, but there were tenant houses.
And then little tenant houses where they had people. See, they used to raise beans and trucking and stuff, and they used to get people to live in there to do that. It was nothing down there. It was just marsh.
The main house down there used to be a courthouse of one of the founders of old Baltimore.
Where Mrs. Jones used to live, the old...
Used to be a courthouse.
Where Virginia lives. That's the house.
They went to a home then. They used to bring folks up down there. I remember when I was a kid, I was the first guy to see Frank. Water is about 8 or 10 foot deep in there then, yet. But, well, you can wade from here to church out there now, and you won't hardly get your feet wet.
Oh, I think it's different now, though.
Yeah, well,
they've dredged it out now since Joppatown. But it's surprising how, I mean, you know, what that was and what is now. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't anything. Mm. Well, we just had a lieutenant. Was a lieutenant and his wife that lived here during World War II. I mean, he lived with, boarded with Albert's brother. And they came to visit us this spring. And they just couldn't get over it. They're from Broadway, Virginia. And the county has just changed so much that, like Fern says, I couldn't hardly find my way around. It's a big change.
It takes 35 years. A lot of time. Mm-hmm. And it's really grown up a lot in 35 years too.
Well, you know, I often think about it. When I was, say, 13, 14 years old, Reverend Austin, the minister up here that we, he's retired minister, he came here as a young man. Of course, he read a lot and all. And I can remember him saying, you know, and it was not a thing built up on any of these roads. And he said that, you know, in some years to come, they predict that it's going to be all business from here to Baltimore, which is now. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't believe that then because there was not even a road where 40 was, see? Mm-hmm. But it really come to pass just like he said.
Did you have much effects of the Depression around here?
Oh, yes. Depression was bad. We lived on a farm, and this is funny to say, but my mother died in 1930, and I think the worst Depression was around 31. I mean, when you felt it the worst through here.
32 was the worst.
Well, maybe, in there. Well, anyway, on a farm, you just couldn't sell anything. A dad had this field in tomatoes from here to the church, and my cousin Herman Gunther used to haul them to Balmer. And a half a bushel of basket, bushel of tomatoes, Herman would get 7 cents for it. Mm-hmm. Well, they stopped picking them because time he paid the basket. You couldn't sell them. There was no way of making any money on a farm. It was really rough. Mm-hmm. And we just sold a few eggs and few things, you know, like chickens and stuff, maybe got $5-6 a week, but it was just Dad and I, and I used to make vegetable soup and put butter in it instead of meat, and we had our own pigs, and we cured them, you know. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have to buy a lot at the store, but I don't know what you do like today. You can't tell people today that Depression could be like that. Mm-hmm. But it was awful. Mm-hmm. I think it hit farmers worse than anybody else. I mean, small farmers. They just hardly could live. if they had to. But then, you know, after like World War One, a lot of people got work. You know, after World War One, that was 1918. Before that time, it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then World War One, it was a lot of work from Edgewood around here. And then when World War Two came along, that gave a lot of employment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Beta, it was awful lot in the papers, you know, that Beta, they fussed about Beta coming and all. I said, I don't know what Harford County, some of the poor people would have done without Beta. They may have not paid big wages, but they gave food to a lot of people that wouldn't have had jobs.
Mm. Was not all Harford County happy when Beta came?
Oh, no. They weren't, were they, Albert? Well, yeah, I remember.
Well, they were right when they came, but then Beta wanted this cheap labor, say, and they had a row about that.
It was a lot of...
Got it up a little bit. A
lot of talk and things at the time. But I say they've been a blessing because they really brought a lot.
Well, Beta come here right during the Depression, say.
Oh.
Well, they come in here, what, 33 and 34 person are just about breaking.
I can't just remember, but I know they did bring a lot of employment here. And, of course, Edgewood has always been a big help, you know, years back to this community and Aberdeen Proving Ground, because a lot of people got jobs there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, during Depression, the people that was working, like I said, 1930 and 33 people that was really working at Edgewood, they never knew it was Depression because they were working civil service and they were getting good wages.
Mm-hmm.
But like farmers and things, it was bad.
I worked on a railroad for 2 weeks for $12.40.
Hmm.
That's 1932. Lucky to make it.
Hmm.
I went to work at Edgewood
Arsenal. I was like that now that you made $12.40 for 2 weeks. Well, I didn't laugh at you. I think you never had that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there was a lot of guys out there that had families wouldn't make any more than I would. And I was a single man then.
You said that you went to work at Edgewood?
I said when I went to work at Edgewood, I got $3.36, and I really thought I had a fortune. And they hired an awful lot of people that time. And they only worked 3 months, and they had a big layoff. They laid off, I don't know, it seemed to me it was about 1,600 people. It was a lot. And of course, I was laid off, and that was the spring before Pearl Harbor. And then, of course, Pearl Harbor came along. And, of course, when that came along, I was called back. And when I went back, I was hired for, I think, 508. It had gone, the labor had gone up.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of thing did you do?
Oh, I worked in the, when I worked that 3 months, I just worked in the gas mask factory. So then when I was called back to a ZVI laundry that didn't last but 2 or 3 years down there because when they stored the clothes, the chemicals eat the clothes up. And when I went back the next time, one of the head supervisors just lived up on the hill from here and she knew I was going back. So she had told that it was Captain Culver at the time, she told him to try to find me and have me come back to the mask factory, see they could transfer you around. So I was transferred, and about a week they found, I had a cousin that was foreman of the mask factory, Chris Gunther, and so finally Chris came over to the ZFI building one day and he said, you know, you've been lost, they can't find you, he said. And so he said, Neoma wants you to come back over the mass factory. But the ZFI building had hired people, but they wasn't running yet. You know, it was just beginning. So I went over there, and I sewed for about 3 months. And they're going to have another big layoff. And the head of the mass factory was Mr. Culp at that time. So he went to Chris, and he said, Chris, he said, I think you ought to take your cousin. And there's a couple other ladies that you brought over at the time, he said, back to the ZVI building. He said, because they're just temporary. And he said, they'll be laid off here. He said, we're going to have a big layoff. And he said, that's not fair to them. So we went back, and I was only in that building, I guess, about maybe a week. And they came to me and asked me if I wanted to be supervisor. So I was made supervisor, and then I was supervisor at the ZFI building till they closed it. When they closed it down, then I was one of the last ones there, because I was taking care of the records of all material coming in. So they left me stay the last supervisor with about 12 women to work things up to the finish. And then the rest of them went, we all were sent to over to manufacturing and filling the chemicals, you know. So I was sent to 509. That's the one in the wartime that had that awful explosion. 12 people were killed, and it was 12 killed and I think 50 hurt. It was really bad.
What had happened?
I never really heard. But, you know, you learn things from seeing things happening. Mm-hmm. And after we had that explosion, they sent us over to 503. And there they had just little, like, booths where just two people worked with these things in case it was explosion, that it wouldn't be many people hurt. Well, we were over there. And right before this bad explosion, they had come out with a machine to cap grenades, because they were using these grenades with arming wars, send them overseas, and they were getting rusty. So they come out by putting them in this here cap with this capping machine. Well, where the bad explosion was, right there where that capping machine was, that's where the people were killed. So then after we went to 503, maybe we were there, I don't know, six months. We weren't there long, I don't think. I can't just remember. But they had explosion again. And the girl that was at the capping machine, she was the one that was killed. And the other one that was in the booth with her, they put her in a barrel of water, I remember, because, you know, that phosphorus, it really burns, you know, keeps on burning. And she lived, she was in the hospital for about 6 months, the one that didn't get killed. So right before I was laid off, when the war was over, I was laid off because the supervisors was munition operators. And orders came from Washington, all munition operators and munition handlers to be laid off a certain time. So I was laid off. So I was just a few days before that. Mr. Lobrine had been to a meeting up number one building, and they had a office that was out to itself at 503, you know, that he wasn't in the main building where things could explode. Mm-hmm. So he stuck his head in. We had a screen door, and in summertime he stuck his, opened the door, and he said to me, he said, Dorothy, found out today, he said, what caused the explosion, he said, they really found out, he said. And he says, oh, I feel so much better. He said, it wasn't any fault of any one of our employees, he said. It wasn't nothing that we did that could have avoided. So he said, I can't tell you right now. He said, I've got something else I got to do. He said, one of these days, he said, someday soon, he said, I'll tell you about it. But then I got laid off, and he never did get around to tell me. But when he said that it was no fault of any of the employees, I just took from where it happened. It had to be that capping machine was, those fuses was just too sensitive for that capping machine, and that's what made the explosion. Mm-hmm. But that first one was terrible. My, it was awful. The walls just went out, and I was sitting at a desk. I was working in an office, and I was sitting at the desk typing up some receipts for the inspections to take that evening. It was last thing in the evening, and it was a woman from Havre de Grace. She wasn't very old. She was quitting that day, and she was so happy, you know, to give up work. And she came in to give her gas mask in, and she was saying, only got, I think she said, 5 more minutes and so many seconds. I mean, she was exaggerating. Mm-hmm. Well, she no more and got out of the office and got back there where she was working on that lawn. Then this explosion happened. And they wouldn't have been able to tell who she was if it wasn't for rings and things on her fingers. She was blown to pieces, and she was quitting just that day. It was an awful thing. And it was a big, long paint room between the office and me where they had these, where they went around on these paint lines. And the wall between where they were assembling these grenades,
mm-hmm.
for the, and packing them in these boxes, was right next to it. And that wall, when that explosion happened, it just blew out. The other wall blew out. The walls just went.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't believe it because it happened so quick. Mm-hmm. What was really happening? And I don't know why. I grabbed up the time cards and my pocketbook and gas mask and went out of the office. And the woman that helped me, she was my assistant, she came in. She had been over, we had two buildings running, it was one across the street, and she was getting the production and stuff for that. And she came in and she said to me, Dorothy, have you got all the productions in the back? And I said, yes, I've got them all down already. And she said, well, she said, I guess I better go take some milk to the kittens. They had a cat back where the munitions was stored, you know, in the big warehouse back there, that had some kittens. So she got a box of milk to take back, because if someone wouldn't have given it some milk or something, it couldn't live, that she didn't think. So she said, I'll take the milk back to the kittens. So she went back to the kittens. So my first thoughts was to go to try find Elsie when I seen that all, and I started out the door. Well, I didn't, I called the hospital. And no more than I hung the receiver up, here you could see the ambulances coming across the airfield there, because we were on this side of the airfield. And I called Mr. Conklin. He was the chief of the manufacturing filling. And our superintendent of the building was at the machine shop. So I called Mr. Lobron and told him that, you know, it had been an explosion. So then I gathered up my little things and I started out. And when I got out, just was going out, and I was going the other way, Mr. Lobron came in the front door, you know, and he came and grabbed hold of me, and he said, Dorothy, where are you going? I said, I'm going back to see where Elsie is. I said, she went to feed the kittens. He said, oh, no, you can't go back there. He said, it's enough hurting now. Don't you get hurt, too, he said. He said, you go out the front door. So I went out the front door because he told me to. So I decided, why couldn't I go up the ramp? Hurt. And I said, well, I said, I wanted to go try to find Elsie, that see if she was hurt. And he said, oh, Elsie's all right. He said, she and Stella, I passed them on the way coming. He said, they're going to 43 building, which was a medical building there. And he said, Stella's on fire. C. Foster's got on her, and she was burning. And Elsie was going with her to 43 building, trying to get that fire out, because it's only some kind of chemicals. Water don't do any good.
Mm.
Some kind of chemicals they put on it. It was an awful thing. Next morning, I got up, well, I won't go back. I thought that was the end of me and work. But then after I stopped and ate breakfast and thought of it, I thought, well, now those soldiers can't say, well, they're going to quit. I got to go. Mm. So I went, and it all worked out all right.
Mm. There must have been quite a lot of people involved with the production over there.
Oh, my, it was. Out of Baltimore.
Hmm.
Buses used to meet the Pennsylvania train, and buses came out of Baltimore. Oh, it was a lot of people. Yeah, it was a lot of people employed. But, I guess it was their dangers there, but it was dangers everywhere. And I guess when you work for civil service, you do about as good as anywhere.
Now, it says that you've been active in the Trinity Lutheran Church. Now, is that something that you, have you always belonged there?
Oh, yeah. I was christened when I was 2 days old. And, of course, when you're christened, you become a member of a church, you know. And, oh, yes, my parents, my grandparents went there, and my great-grandparents. In fact, my great-grandparents, and I understand that my grandfather Herbert and the Hanses and the Lances were the three families that really built and, you know, started the church. And these here are my father's baptism certificate. Mm-hmm. And it was a man that used to come up from Stemmer's Run that was a preacher. Mm-hmm. And I think he used to preach in German. And those are in German. I can't read some of it. It's German. Mm-hmm. So the people that, I mean, the older people that was in this neighborhood were Germans, that they spoke German, and they liked this service to be in German, see.
Hmm.
Yeah, my grandfather Lomar was supposed to have come over to this country when he was 7 years old.
Hmm. Yeah, these are all in German.
Hmm. They're old.
And it says Magnolia.
It says Magnolia. See, there wasn't a Joppa post office at that time.
Huh.
Because B&O wasn't here.
Uh-huh. Hmm. It's sort of ironic today now that Magnolia's just about...
It's about washed out. But it was must have been the main post office in those days. I don't really know. I just take it from them written out like that.
Hmm. And let's see, what about your activities with Edgewood Homemakers?
Well... I've been in Homemakers a long time, and I was president for a while, for maybe 4 or 5 years, and I'm still active in Homemakers.
I guess the organization has been around in Hartford County a pretty long time.
Oh, yes. When I first joined it, well, the people that was in there then, they've met their 50 years in it, because I can remember going to a meeting where Mrs. Brumfield, she just died a couple years ago now, she was in the Homemakers then, and there was a lot of the older time people that was here. So Homemakers had been, I don't just how long, but 50 some years it's been here in the county.
Hmm.
Yeah. When I first joined Homemakers, it seemed so great to me, because we did so many things.
Mm-hmm.
I never did before. We had a Mrs. Mittendorf. Now, her husband was my father's sister's school teacher at Joppa. Mr. Mittendorf was. I've heard Dad talk about him. And I knew Mr. Mittendorf and Mrs. Mittendorf, and she was very active. And she used to go to the work day and get so many things, because I know we made trays and different things, and she helped us with it. Mrs. Tucker up here, she was very active before she, you know, when she lived here in Harford County. And Mrs. Marcicola, I believe Mrs. Marcicola probably still living. And Mrs. Fred Mars, she's a woman of, she's in her 80s now. She lives down here at Edgewood. See, when I first joined Homemakers, it was called Old Post Road Homemakers. And Old Post Road had been divided now with Edgewood and Wilna, because it got too much for one club, and they changed it. Of course, I've been in Edgewood Club.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just close to Wilna too, but I mean, really, I'm kind of out of territory with the Edgewood Club that I'm in now, because most of the people that's in Edgewood Club is around Long Bar, up in that, you know, that area. We have a few around Edgewood. And Virginia Smith, she used to be Claude Krause's wife, and she was a Mrs. Krause that had the store up here for years. She's with me, but she lives up here at the corner. But we're about the furthest ones out now. I mean, most people are closer.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things did you do as a child and growing up here for fun and recreation?
Well, there wasn't much. Things at our church. We were very active in our Luther League. We had a Luther League. And when I was coming, went through this stuff, I meant to bring it down to show Albert. It was a program of one of our first plays that we had. That was something that we had a lot. We had had plays.
Mm.
And that was the way our Luther League would make a little bit of money. In fact, our Luther League, we built a hall. And we tried to help pay for it. And that hall cost only $5,000. But you know, it was a struggle back in those days, you know, for you to pay for it. Mm-hmm. It don't sound possible now, mm-hmm. with the prices, but you know, where people have money. Mm-hmm. They just didn't have it those days. Mm-hmm. But that was the only thing I ever did. It was now, when I went to school, we used to have like little festivals at our school, and little, what they call them, box parties. You know, we'd bring a box lunch, and the girls would bring a box lunch, and the boys would buy them, you know, and that was the way they made money. Mm. And outside of that, I never went to dances around here. I was an only child, and my parents didn't approve of some of the dances, so I never got to go. So, but that was about the only thing that was, you know, they used to have a dances down at Joppa, but I didn't go. Albert did. Mm. He knew about them. That, you know, that was when we were younger, they had that. Now, late years, they didn't have that. Mm-hmm. So.
When did your farm, how did your farm come to be called Sandy Hill Farm?
Well, we sold raw milk for a good many years. In fact, when we stopped having raw milk here, was the last raw milk in Maryland that was accredited. Because the health department said that we were the last people going out. And it was under Donald Honey did it for about, I think it was 8 months. I don't know just what it was. And of course it went on just like what we had it. And the health department come and made tests and everything. And when he quit, they said to me that that was the last. It was another woman. I think she was out in Western Maryland somewhere, that she had a farm. But that she had gotten older and she died. But we sold raw milk. When we first started selling raw milk, we just bottled it and put it in half-gallons jugs. And they told us we didn't have to have no inspection or nothing. As long as the people came here and picked it up, they could see the sanitation thing. Mm-hmm. But one day, Mr. Wison was driving through, and he had a man from Balmer City that was with the health department. Oh, I can't think of that man's name now either. Well, anyway, he saw a milk sign out. So he decided to come in. And he said, well, you people can't sell milk like this, he said. You've got to have it. We used to have a milk cooler, and we had 5-gallon cans, and we had a refrigerator that we, it was well refrigerated and all, but they didn't come and take samples or anything. You just sold the milk. And he said that we'd have to bottle it. And Mr. Wison tried hard to keep him from making us do it. He said, I think the people that gets them from them likes to get it in the gallon jugs, you know. He said, you know, they had big necks. He said, they're easy to wash and all. But anyway, we had to, they gave us a certain amount of time. We had to put it in bottles, 1/2-gallon bottles, and bottle it. And we had to have a tank. It was regulations that we had to have. Mm-hmm. So our milk caps had to be, have a name on it. Well, I noticed you reading in something in one of these things that this farm maybe had a name way back, but I never read that and didn't know it. But we had some bullnosing we had to have done. And one of the men that worked with him did it. And he said, Albert, he said, you don't have nothing but an old sandy hill up there. He said, it's all sand. We do have a lot of sand. And so when we had to have a name, we thought, well, why not call it Sandy Hill? We had to have that put on this here milk cap. So that's how come we got the name, through that dairy. But we sold milk. It was accredited, and the health department from Balmer City used to call and find out whether we had milk for different people that they had that needed raw milk. Mm. Sometimes the children, that it would do them good, that if they had the raw milk, or something in the raw milk that they needed. And as long as it was accredited, they would recommend us, see. And so then we had people that came here from Tacoma, Washington. They used to come out like on a Sunday and get 10-15 gallon for different neighbors and haul it. And we had a lot of customers from Parkville, down around Essex. Oh, it was people all over. We were selling, when we stopped selling milk when Donald took over, it was about 80 gallon a day. Hmm. And Mr. Wison used to come and get samples and send it away, and you know that that it was clean and, you know, passed all the tests and all.
Mm-hmm.
So one time we did have it that for a short time the test showed high bacteria, but it was Albert had to get a veterinarian to find it because we couldn't find it what it was. You can get a certain kind of mastitis with a cow that you don't know you have it, and it'll run your bacteria. So of course we found it right away, but the thing of it was Mr. Wison got, his eyes got bad and he had to stop, and they had young men that came in. So I can remember I was over there by the well when the man said it, and I thought, oh my lands, what's happened to the milk? He said, he said it, you know, he says, you know something funny about your milk? And I said, it is, what's the matter now? Like that to him. He said, well, he said, do you know? He says, your milk is raw. And he says, the bacteria count is so much lower, he said, and Western Maryland's pasteurized milk. He says, can't understand it. Wasn't bad after all, but the way he said it, I thought, oh my, something wrong with it. But no, we didn't have much trouble with the health department. I mean, we got along very good. I mean, it was everything mostly all right.
Mm-hmm.
It was never nothing from cleanliness or nothing like that that they ever... The one thing that they complained about, and I never will get over it, we had a little keg in back of the, right at the corner of our shed where we used to throw the broken bottles. And they came and made a check. And he said, oh, your dairy's fine, tank's nice and clean, everything's fine. But he says, you can't be having broken bottles around. Now, you can't go to a dump every time you get a broken bottle with a milk bottle, you know, it would just automatically break it once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I say it was funny things that they would complain about.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't nothing serious.
Mm. Was it, I guess, let's see, did you, how would you do your day? I mean, did you have to milk your cows twice a day?
Oh, yeah, twice. Mm-hmm.
And what kind did you have?
Well, they were mixed, I think. They were Guernseys and Holsteins and Brown Swiss, just mixed cattle. But they were real good cows. I mean, we got a, they were good producing cows. And my husband worked them, milked them before he went to work and would milk them when he come home from work. Of course, we had automatic milkers, you know, surge milkers,
mm-hmm.
that he milked them with.
Yeah.
It made a long day for him, but he liked it, I think. When we started selling the raw milk, how it all started, Mr. Bowers had a raw milk route through here, and she was sister-in-law. It was Albert's brother, and his wife bought a little corner of ground from us, and they got milk here when their baby was little. See, well, Ethel May got used to drinking that milk, and when they had to get pasteurized milk, she wouldn't drink it. So they came and asked us if we'd sell them some milk, you know, right from the cows, so we did. And the Wimmers lived right below us. That's the only two people that got milk. They got it from Mr. Bowers, too, and their children didn't like it. They wouldn't drink it. So they'd come morning and, you know, every morning and get some.
Mm-hmm.
And from that on, you got a few more customers, and that's the way it grew, you know. So
mm-hmm.
It really got to be a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got too much. I mean, I couldn't, you know. It was washing those milk bottles and things. It was too much work.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to give it up. And Donald Heine said he used to come and fill our silo, because you can't buy big equipment for everything. You know, we pay him to fill it. So he used to say, you people make all the money. As shippers, we only get part of our money. So he came up and worked a while, but he found out that it was much harder where we were making a lot more work. But it wasn't all that with him. His father got feeling so badly, and the hard man had quit, and he had to go back on the farm at home. So then he gave it up. Since that, we've rented the farmland out, and we rent the pastures out. We make more now renting farmland and pastures than we did when we had the dairy, so I guess we're better off.
You're known as the Sunshine Lady.
I don't know how that was known. I don't know. That's some of Dolores' talk, I think. I don't know anything about that.
You're always cheerful. Well, it seems like nothing gets you down, all the things that you've been through.
Well, we've had a lot. Yep. I had a sick mother as a child. I was only about 13, 14 years old, and my mother was taken sick with bad heart trouble, and she died when I was 16, and that was hard. And so we've had our ups and downs. The barn was struck with lightning and burnt, and we had to build a new barn. And of course, I don't know if you noticed, my husband was caught in a corn picker and lost his head, part of his head, and that was another bad ordeal. But thank goodness it all came out. His hand is real good. It doesn't bother him at all. And you know, lots of times when you lose your fingers, they say you have pain the rest of your life, but he's never had. And of course, unfortunately, I think it didn't happen. Something couldn't be helped. At he didn't put his hand in where, you know, you generally get your hand caught. He got it caught in that Huston bed. He went back to see if it was chain was tight enough. And he was walking back to get on the tractor, he said, to come keep on picking. It was all right. And some way or another, he tripped by the what's name, and he fell, and his hand went in that Huston bed. Most of them gets in that point, you know, go try to take something out. He wasn't doing that. So I guess he couldn't help it. It was just one of those accidental things. Yeah, we had, we were lucky enough to have a hard man at that time. And we had a hard man, full-time hard man, and he did the milking and everything. But I had to get the milk bottles washed and all when I went to hospital. He was in the hospital 5 weeks and 2 or 3 days. And I think of all that time, I only missed 2 days. But one time it was snowing, and it was something else the other day. I don't remember what it was that I didn't go. But I made it. I used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But of course, the daughter, she was in Delaware College, and that was bad getting her back and forth that far from home.
Well, I think I can drain your